Ah, you're here. Good.
A ghost couldn't dig a grave, make John strangle me to death.
Lights out, everybody.
Welcome to the Old Time Radio Cast, where we take the most terrifying tales from the golden age of radio, clean them up, and remaster them for your listening pleasure, truly preserving the very best era of audio entertainment with stories of suspense, mystery, and horror. In this week's episode, we have a double feature of the short-lived series Murder at Midnight. We'll begin with an episode titled Wherever I Go from 1946, followed by The House Where Death Lived from the same year. Murder at Midnight was known for its very dark themes and also its lengthy but macabre organ theme that played throughout each episode. Enjoy the show.
Do you any good. Besides, you're pointing it the wrong way.
I'm pointing it right between your eyes.
That's what I mean. I...
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight. When the graves gape open and death strikes.
How?
You'll learn the answer in just a minute, then. Wherever I go. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of Mystery and Terror by Masters of the Macabre. Our story, A Study in Crime and Retribution, is by William Morwood. Its title, Wherever I Go. The music room of an old country mansion. Seated at the piano, playing with the skill of an accomplished musician, is Gordon Ormsby. Engrossed in what he is doing, he is not aware his wife, Ellen, has come in until...
For goodness sakes, Gordon, when are you going to stop that pounding?
What? Well, I thought you enjoyed music, my dear.
I do when it's well played. Oh, don't be childish. You might have a little consideration for my headache.
You and your headaches. There's nothing whatever wrong with you. The doctors have as good as told you that. It's all in your mind. The affectation of a silly, rich woman.
Lucky for you, I am rich. Well, where would you be now?
Someplace where I'd amount to something. I had talents when I married you, Ellen. I could have been a great musician or a great painter or writer.
You were what you are now, what you always will be. A dilettante, a dabbler.
It's your money that ruined me, softened me up, robbed me of my ambition.
If you hate my money so much, there's nothing to prevent you walking out on it.
I will. Someday.
Not if I know you. You'll stick around as long as I have a penny left. Oh, my head.
Oh, you poor, poor darling.
Oh, I don't expect sympathy from you, but... Oh, when I feel like this, I could kill myself.
That would be too much to hope for.
Wouldn't it be nice for you, Gordon? Little me out of the way. And all my wicked money to spend exactly as you pleased. But don't worry. I'll live to a ripe old age. Just to spite you.
I'd never thought of it before. Her dying. Never. But after that, I couldn't get it out of my head. There was so much I could do with her money. I could go abroad. Study. But first, I had to get rid of her. It was dangerous even to think about, but I conceived a plan and developed it carefully, slowly, step by step. Ellen, we've got rats in the cellar. I saw signs of them today.
How awful. We must do something about it.
Ellen, have you done anything about those rats?
I ordered some stuff from the drugstore.
Well, there's only one thing that's any good, and you'll have to get a prescription for that.
Arsenic.
Let's eat home on Thursday, Ellen.
No, but it's a servant's night out, and we always go to a restaurant.
I know, but I'm going to try my hand at cooking up something.
Well, it's sure to be poison, but... All right.
We ate dinner at home on Thursday, the two of us alone together. Afterwards, Ellen complained of a headache and went up to her room. I followed a little later.
This is a surprise.
I brought you a cup of cocoa, my dear, to help put you to sleep.
That's suspiciously thoughtful of you, Gordon.
I'm afraid it's still too hot to drink. I'll put it down here.
What have you done to your hand?
What?
It's all bandaged up.
Oh, I scalded it in the kitchen. It's a nuisance, too. I wanted to write tonight.
What are you working on now, Shakespeare? Your memoirs?
No, dear. I don't expect to die for a while yet. No, it's a story about a girl suffering from an incurable disease who commits suicide.
Sounds morbid to me.
Oh, but it's not. I'm making it very tender and beautiful. As a matter of fact, I did mean to write the death scene tonight. With this hand, I'm... Say, Ellen.
Hmm?
Would you help me out?
How?
Well, I've got the girl's suicide note all set in my mind. I can't write with this. Would you write it down while I dictate it?
Oh, do it yourself tomorrow.
Oh, please. It'll only take a minute. Please.
Oh, all right. Where's some paper?
Here.
But that's my very best stationery. I hate to waste it.
It won't be wasted. Ready?
Yes.
Here goes. It's, I can't stand the pain any longer. Nobody knows how much I've suffered. Death will be peaceful compared to this.
Wait a minute.
What? What's wrong?
You're going too fast.
Oh.
Death will be... What?
Peaceful compared to this. Forgive me for what I'm doing, but this is the only way out. Signed...
Yes?
Ellen.
What?
I named her that, dear, because she reminded of me, of you, so noble in her suffering. I thought you'd be pleased.
Well, I'm not. You'll have to think of some other name.
All right. Jane.
Jane?
You remember Jane Turner, the girl I was going with when I met you? I don't think she'd mind.
But I would. There. It's signed, Ellen.
Thank you, my dear. You don't know how much this means to me.
Oh, my head's splitting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cocoa? Drink it. That should end your headache. Drink it, Ellen.
Tastes.
Well, I couldn't find the sugar, so I sweetened it with maple syrup.
Well, I don't suppose it'll kill me.
Drink it all. Drink it all.
There. Oh.
What's the matter?
Oh, that pain. Gordon, do something. Why are you...
It won't be long now, Ellen.
You mean
that arsenic
you
bought for the rats.
You're mad. They'll hang you for this.
No, Ellen. Oh, no. You have left a note behind. It's a clear case of suicide. I was shaking all over. Yet my nerves had to be steady for what lay ahead of me. My own life depended on it. Music. Music. That would relax me. The piano. I raced downstairs for the music room, but before I reached it, I heard the playing. I pushed open the door. A man was sitting there. A man I'd never seen before, but who was somehow vaguely familiar.
Hello.
Who are you?
Don't you know? Well,
of course not. What are you doing here?
There was nobody at the piano. I didn't think you'd mind.
Well, I do mind. How'd you get in? The door's locked.
Is it? I didn't notice.
Breaking and entering, huh? I've got a good mind to call the police.
I'm sorry you're so suspicious. Still, I realize the strain you must be under.
What do you mean by that?
I'm afraid I'm interrupting you in business vital to both of us. I'll call again some other time.
Oh, wait. You can't leave like this. At least tell me your name.
I have many different names. When the time comes, you can call me by any one of them. Goodbye.
I put the stranger out of my mind. Too much depended on the telephone call I had to make. A single slip-up now, and a rope was waiting for me. I dialed with shaking fingers. Dr. Sampson, this is Gordon Ormsby. You must come at once. Ellen is dead. I think she's taken poison.
It worked out, just as I'd planned, just as I'd hoped it would. The doctor's visit, the police, the inquest, no false moves, no suspicions. I became the sole inheritor of a large estate and a free man. I moved out of the old house and into a hotel suite in town. I don't know when it started to happen, but I first knew that something was wrong, and my fingers would no longer obey me at the piano. Nothing would come. Or rather, nothing but discords. I decided that my nerves were overstrained, that I needed a rest. Figured a trip somewhere would do me good. I went to the telephone to order my car brought around first thing in the morning. But before I picked up the receiver... Yes?
I'm going with you, Gordon.
Who is this?
Your friend. I'll see you first thing in the morning.
But...
Come up, please.
Operator, you cut me off. I was making a very important call.
There must be some mistake, sir. There was no call on your line.
I didn't wait. I couldn't. I packed that evening. I slipped a gun into my pocket. I left the hotel. By 11 o'clock, I was far out in the open country, driving west. The night was pitch black, and every mile I burrowed further into the darkness. And then suddenly, a terrible conviction came over me. I knew I wasn't alone.
I'm coming up front now, Gordon.
You!
I said I was coming with you.
When did you get in this car?
I've been here right along. You drive well, Gordon. A cool head and a steady hand. But then you had to have them, didn't you?
What does that mean?
I was just thinking out loud. The money's nice, but music means a lot too, doesn't it?
Oh.
A pity that went sour on you.
Look, I don't know who you are or what you're talking about.
And yet you proved a point to Ellen. You proved that you were an artist in a way, even though she couldn't live to appreciate it. Her death was your masterpiece.
The sweat stood out on my forehead. My mouth was dry. I didn't want it this way. One murder was enough to haunt me. But he left me with no alternative. He knew too much. Somewhere along that road, when the night was darkest, I knew I had to kill the stranger.
Yes, the mysterious stranger seems to know a great deal. Is it possible he knows even more than Gordon suspects about his plan for...
murder at midnight.
Continue our story.
I knew what I was looking for. A lonely stretch of road with no sign of life. At last the headlights found it. A valley with trees growing down to the edge of the road. The stranger seemed asleep, but he stirred as I jammed on the brakes.
Hey, what's wrong, Gordon?
Must have a flat. The wheel feels funny. Would you mind having a look?
That would be very unwise for me.
Why?
You have a gun in your pocket. I would make a perfect target out in the headlights.
Well, since you're so suspicious. Here, take it.
You amuse me, Gordon. However...
How do they look?
All right on this side.
I'm sure it's one of the front tires.
I'll see the other side.
got him. He was standing squarely in front of the radiator when I got him. Just to make sure, I backed the car over his body. I dragged him across the ditch and into the woods. And I dug a shallow grave with a tire iron, hacking in among the roots and the rocks. And then I covered him over. I got back into the car. I needed a drink. And when I came to a juke joint along the highway, I stopped.
What's yours, mister?
Scotch, straight.
You been driving hard, mister?
Why?
You look all in.
Give me another shot. Look, I'll buy the bottle.
I don't always want to sell. You know, scotch is hard to get around here.
I'll pay for it. I took the bottle over to a booth and began putting it away. I felt better. Warm inside. It was going to be all right after all. The stranger was dead, and they'd never find his body. I was in the clear with nothing to worry about.
Help a poor blind man. Help a blind man.
There was something about that blind man's stick that got on my nerves. He came up to my table.
Help the old blind man, please.
Get away from here.
Please, sir, if you'd be so kind.
Will you get away?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I don't want any favors from anyone.
I said, just... be it!
Hey! I'm going, but you shouldn't have done that.
What's going on here? What's the idea of shoving Nettie?
He was annoying me. Then I saw him. She had the blind man by the elbow and was leading him toward the door. The stranger.
What's the matter with you, mister? What are you staring at?
There. Don't you see him?
Oh, blind Ned? Well, sure.
No, no. The man with him, opening the door.
There's nobody with him. Blind Ned don't need nobody. He's been going in and out of here by himself for years.
But it was he. I knew it was. I'd killed him, buried him, and... well, was he dead or wasn't he? I had to know. I drove back up the road. There were the trees and the broken weeds and the ditch through which I'd dragged the body. I walked carefully among the leaves, searching for the grave.
Hello there.
What?
What you doing?
Oh, who are you?
State trooper. Saw your car parked down the road, followed you in.
Well, I'm looking for my watch. I lost it here this afternoon at a picnic. I didn't realize it until I got home, so of course
sure,
I turned around.
Sure, sure. I'll help you.
Oh, no, please don't bother.
No bother. I got a flashlight here.
Well, it's awfully nice of you, but I don't think...
Hey, what's this?
What? Where?
Ground's all scraped up into a... looks like a grave.
Huh. What would a grave be doing here?
That's what I'd like to know. Give me a hand, will you? Fresh dirt and rocks digs easy.
Well, I...
What's the matter? Scared?
Well, no, no, no. It's just
a... down to the bottom anyhow. Oh. Well, I'll be...
What is it?
It's a grave, all right. But if there was ever a body in it, it's gone now.
I had only one idea after that. To get away as far away as possible. I drove like a wild man the rest of the night and all next day, stopping only for gas. Finally, I just couldn't drive any farther. I stopped at a small hotel, went up to the desk to register.
Hey, sign here, please.
Right. Here. I'm driving across country and I've got to start first thing in the morning.
Hey, certainly, Mr. Ormsby.
Ormsby.
What time would you like to be called?
At daylight. And another thing, I don't want to be disturbed under any circumstances.
Yes, sir.
That's important. No matter who wants to see me, on what excuse, I don't want to be disturbed.
I understand, Mr. Ormsby. Now, if you follow the court...
The elevator doors were just closing when I saw him. He'd come in from the street and was walking across the lobby to the desk. I reached my room, dismissed the bellhop, and locked the door. With a shaking hand, I picked up the telephone. This is Mr. Ormsby. I thought I recognized a friend of mine in the lobby. A man about the same height and build as myself. Dressed in a gray suit.
I am afraid...
Well, he came in right after me. I haven't seen him in some time, and I've forgotten his name. Would you mind looking in the register and telling me what it is?
Just a minute, now, look. Here we are.
your signature, Mr. Ormsby, and then...
Yes?
I'm sorry, sir. There is something, but the name's blotted. I can't make it out.
I knew now there was no escape. I took the money from my billfold and piled it on the table. I examined my revolver to make sure it was loaded. And then I sat and waited. A few minutes before midnight, the knock came. Come in.
Hello. You act as if you were expecting me.
I was. The only thing I'm not sure about is what you want. Or rather, how much.
You should know.
All the cash I've got's on the table. Nearly $500.
Ellen left you a good deal more than that.
All right, I'll write you out a check. Name the amount.
Everything you possess.
What? Are you crazy? Do you honestly think, after the risks I took, the risks I'm still taking, I'd give everything away to a cheap blackmailer?
Murder is an expensive hobby, Gordon.
Well, not that expensive. If you want to be reasonable, say $50,000.
I'm afraid there's no compromise. And I'm not just talking about money.
Listen, this is your last chance. $50,000 or...
Or what, Gordon?
Or you don't leave this room alive.
You tried to kill me once before, remember?
Yeah, I lost my head. The car only stunned you, and I didn't make sure that you were dead. It'll be different this time.
It's always going to be different, isn't it, Gordon? When you disposed of Ellen, you were going to lead such a rich, beautiful life. But what happened to it? Your music went. You couldn't play.
Shut up.
And then your heart went. You struck out at an old blind man.
Listen, you.
There isn't very much left now, except your mind. And that's starting to go, too. Sometimes you see me, sometimes you don't.
I see you now, large as life. But do you see this?
That gun won't do you any good. Besides, you're pointing it the wrong way.
I'm pointing it right between your eyes.
That's what I mean.
Well, you... He was gone. Yes, gone. Nowhere in the room. Then I heard the rapping at the door. In a daze, mechanically, I opened it.
Anything wrong, mister?
What? Who are you?
The house detective. I thought I
heard... Oh, you must have seen him. He must have run past you in the corridor.
Who?
The stranger, the man who was in my room.
Why did... Hey, be careful of that gun.
Well, I had to shoot him. He was threatening me. He was standing over there when I let him have it.
Oh, yeah?
What did he look like?
He's about my height and build, wearing a gray suit.
Like the one you're wearing?
Huh? Oh. Oh, yes.
I thought so. Look.
At what?
The mirror. You shot at your own reflection.
You mean...
Now do you know who I am, Gordon?
There! Didn't you hear him?
Hear what? What are you talking about?
No. No, you wouldn't hear. Only I would. And now I do know who and what he is. I know why I couldn't escape him. Here. Here, take this gun. I want to give myself up.
Give yourself up?
My name is Gordon Ormsby. I killed my wife. I poisoned her. I made it look like suicide, and there never was any trial.
Oh, I get it. Sure,
it was a perfect
sure.
crime. At least I thought it was a perfect crime until he came into the picture.
Now, don't you worry about it one bit, Mr. Ormsby. You just
wait
come
a
along with
wait
me.
Wait a minute. You think I'm making it up. But I'm crazy, don't you?
No,
you
no.
do think so. But it's true. Every word of it.
Sure, I got a good friend who's a doctor. You tell him
doctor.
All about...
Doctor? No. No, he won't believe me either. Nobody will believe me. They'll all think that I'm mad. And... Oh, don't you see? That's why I have to give myself up. Because that's the only way I can get away from him. If you hang me. But if you don't...
They won't, Gordon. They'll put you away. And wherever you go, I'll be there, too. Remember that? Wherever you go...
Mr.
taking him firmly by the arm, the detective leads the struggling Gordon out into the corridor. A corridor that grows darker and darker until it is completely black. Somewhere in that blackness, a voice is whispering. Whispering. And it continues to whisper until it is drowned by a clock striking 12 for...
Murder! At midnight.
With us again when death whispers softly in the night and the clocks strike 12 for
murder at midnight.
The part of Gordon Ormsby was played by Barry Kroger. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
Just an ordinary cane, my dear.
Alec.
It's a sword cane, see? Calhoun used it when he killed his wife, right where you're standing.
Alec, you killed Sanders.
Exactly.
And now you're going to kill me.
Yes.
No. Keep away from me.
I'm sorry.
Keep away.
My dear.
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest. Our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The House Where Death Lived. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story is a ghostly nightmare by one of radio's best-known mystery writers, Robert Newman. Its title, The House Where Death Lived. A large rambling house on top of a hill. A house whose windows are either shuttered or broken. A rusty iron fence surrounds it, and its grounds are waste and uncared for. A car grinds slowly up the hill, stops before the main gate, and two men get out. One of them is gray-haired but vigorous. The other wears a chauffeur's uniform. They push open the heavy gate, start up the gravel path.
Quite a joint.
You could hardly expect it to be a show place after being empty for more than 10 years.
It's open.
Yes. Oh, I'm glad we didn't have to force it. All right, Sanders. You can go back to the car and wait for me. I should be out in about a half an hour or so.
You mean you're going in alone?
Why, yes. Somehow I don't think you're exactly suited by temperament for psychic research.
Okay, Doc. I'll be waiting for you back in the car.
Right. Now, let's see. I suppose the best place to start would be...
Good evening.
What? Oh, I'm awfully sorry. I hope I hadn't made a mistake. This is the Calhoun house, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, this is very embarrassing. I was down to see the trustees just this morning. They gave me permission to go through the place and told me that there was no one living here, that no one had lived here for many years.
As you can see, that's not quite true. Not that it matters. I lead a rather lonely life, and I'm very glad you came. I'd be more than happy to show you around.
Well, you're very kind. My name is Goff, Dr. Alexander Goff.
Dr. Goff.
For the past few years, I've been specializing in psychic research.
Oh, yes.
You've heard of me?
I'm sorry, no. But I do know that scientists, specialists in psychical research, have been interested in the house for many years. There have been several books written about it.
Well, I read about it in the series of studies that Kinsey did. He said it was one of the most fertile fields for manifestations he'd ever come across. It has a long history of apparitions and hauntings.
That's very true. And now, would you like to look around?
I'd like that very much.
Very well. I imagine the best place to begin is with the cellar. This way.
The cellar. That's where Mrs. Calhoun was killed, wasn't it?
Yes. Huh? I keep the door locked now for that and for several other reasons.
May I?
No, wait. Wait, don't try to go down. Have you a match?
Why, yes. There aren't any stairs.
Exactly. That's how Mrs. Calhoun was killed. The stairs had become rotten and Calhoun took them out, put in that ladder. Mrs. Calhoun didn't know it. She tried to go down, fell, and broke her neck.
But she wasn't just killed. She was murdered, wasn't she?
Well, that's hard to say. I don't think even Calhoun could tell you whether it was deliberate or not. For a long time, people didn't even suspect what had happened. They thought that she'd run away, disappeared. However, after she was killed, Calhoun buried her down there in the cellar. You see, over there, near that big flagstone.
Hmm. Oh, I see. Well, after that, there was something about a gardener, wasn't there?
Yes, Burroughs. He had helped Calhoun take out the stairs. Considerably later, he was working in the cellar and found some bones, and he put two and two together
and went to the police.
No, he did a lot better than that. From his own point of view. Shall we go back into the parlor?
Oh, yes, of course.
I'll just shut this door again. There. Burroughs began blackmailing Calhoun. Calhoun paid for a while, and then one day he called Burroughs in here, into the parlor. He was sitting over there at that desk. He had his cane with him, the cane that's on the desk there now. You can look at it if you like.
Well, thank you. I would like to look at it.
Twist the handle and pull on it.
A sword cane?
Yes. He killed Burroughs right here in this room. That stain on the carpet, there is his blood. This time he didn't even try to get away with it. He called in the police and he was tried and sent to an institution.
Yes, but that's what I don't understand. If Calhoun had committed two murders, why wasn't he sent to jail or hanged?
Because no one knew whether he was sane or not. As a matter of fact, I don't think Calhoun knew himself. You see, when they asked him why he had killed his wife and Burroughs, he said he had to, that he'd been told to.
Told to? By whom?
Well, he wasn't sure, by voices. He said they told him that they lived here in this house before him, that they had killed, and that he would have to kill too. Ah,
excellent, excellent. Just what I've been looking for, what I've hoped for. A house with a tradition of hauntings, where each generation is affected by that tradition and adds to it. What's the matter?
They've come for me. They're weighing me down, dragging
what?
Me back.
They? Who? Oh, you're ill. Here, let me help you.
No, it's no use. You can't pick me up. It's too much on my hands. On my head.
Where is he?
He was there, right there on the floor. I tried to pick him up and put him on the couch, but I couldn't lift him. Now he's gone.
Well, now look, Doc, if he fell down, if he was as weak as you said it... Hey, wait a minute. Hey, what did he look like?
Oh, Well, he was quite old, about 70, and very tall and thin. He had white hair and a white goatee.
Holy smokes.
What's the matter?
Well, I was waiting outside for you. The guy that lives just down the hill came by, and we kind of talked a little.
Yes?
I told him you were inside here, and you described Calhoun to me, the guy that used to live here. And the old gent you say you spoke to sounds just like him.
But it couldn't have been. Calhoun is still in an institution.
No, he's not. At least not exactly. That's how this guy happened to talk about it. You see, he just read in the paper that Calhoun had died yesterday.
Sanders.
Yeah?
That was Calhoun's ghost.
Oh, now, look,
it was, I tell you. It has to be. This is what I've been looking for years. An apparition that manifests itself without a medium or any apparatus. It's exactly what I need for the last chapter of my book. And I'm going to stay here until he appears again. Calhoun? Calhoun? Where are you? Why don't you come back? I'm waiting for you. Oh, it's no use. 2 days now and not a sign of him. Maybe Sanders was right. Maybe I did imagine the whole thing. Either that... Wait a minute. He didn't die here. He died at the asylum. He'd lived here all his life, committed 2 murders here. Perhaps the aura, the forces here, were strong enough to evoke him once, but not to bring him back again. His wife and the gardener, they did die here. If I could establish contact, I might be able to evoke them. Or else if someone else died here, someone I knew and someone that knew me. Calhoun! Is that right? Is that what I have to do? What? Who's there?
Me, Doc. Sanders.
Oh. Just a second.
Oh, what a night. It's blowing like all get-out.
What do you want, Sanders?
Well, the missus thought you should get a little worried about you. She thought you might be running low on food.
Oh, no. I still have plenty. I haven't been eating much.
Any luck?
No, he hasn't materialized again, but I'm sure he will. I know he will.
If someone else died here.
Huh?
Someone you knew. And someone that knew you.
Yes.
What's the matter, Doc? Hey, why are you staring at me that way? Doc!
Hmm? I'm sorry, Sanders. Sanders, I was just thinking that if you stayed here with me, it might help.
But I thought you said I was all wrong for this kind of stuff. You know I don't believe in ghosts, anything like that.
Well, I did say that, Sanders, but... Oh, this place is different. This is such a powerful, fertile field for psychic manifestations that I think if you did stay, we could cure your skepticism permanently.
Yeah? How?
Well, this is such a perfect night for an evocation.
I don't hear anything. Just the storm.
Shh. Listen hard. There it is again. It's down in the cellar.
Where's that?
It's back there.
Where?
Go ahead, run. You're quicker than I am, Sanders. Run, hurry.
Okay, but I still don't hear anything.
A man with an obsession in a haunted house. A man with a corpse on his hands as the clock strikes 12 for...
Murder at midnight.
And now, to continue with our story. It's just a moment later, and Dr. Goff is still standing by the open cellar door. Lighting a candle, he peers down to where Sanders' body lies huddled on the flagstones below.
Sanders? Sanders? I think I'd better make sure. This ladder. Oh, this. Oh, Well, now, let's see. He's dead, all right. Very dead. Neck broken in two places. I'm sorry, Sanders. Very sorry. But science is a hard mistress. I've been working on my book for 7 years. This is the first chance I've had to make detailed and objective observations on a specific set of phenomena. And when Calhoun didn't materialize again, I'm sure you understand. The only problem now is the police. They're apt to be very uncompromising about something like this. There were only some way that I could...
I know.
The car. It's quite late and the storm blowing. There's not likely to be anyone around. Oh, come on, Sanders. You and I are going to take a little trip. Now, we're almost there, Sanders. Just a little farther. Now, here we are. Now, let's see. Well, you turned the car around before you came in, so it's headed downhill. That's splendid. Very considerate. Now, open the door and put you in. Up. Just make sure you don't fall sideways. But you stay behind the wheel. That's it. Oh, is there anything else? Anything I've forgotten? I don't think so. Well, just take the brake off. And shut the door. And wait. There's no telling how far she'll go. Especially with the streets so bumpy. I only hope that she'll go far enough to pick up plenty of speed. So that when she does... She's swinging. Swinging to the right. Yeah. And now I wait. Sanders! Sanders! Where are you? It's been 4 or 5 days now. Why haven't you come back? Haven't you wanted to? Or haven't you been able to find a way? This is where you died, remember? Or down here in the cellar. Are you down there? Sanders? Are you down there? No. Not down there. Not anywhere. What's that? Yes? Who's that? Who's there?
It's me, Gene.
What do you want, Gene?
I want to talk to you. Let me in, please.
Just a second.
Alec. Oh, I'm so glad to see you, dear.
I asked you, what do you want? Why did you come here?
Why? It's been almost a week now since you've been home. Have you any idea how worried I've been? You didn't even phone me after Sanders was killed.
I'm sorry. I just never thought of phoning you. I had other things on my mind.
How did it happen, Alec?
You read the verdict of the inquest. He probably fell asleep at the wheel waiting for me. The brakes slipped, the car rolled down the hill, and... crash.
Poor Sanders. Somehow I can't help feeling...
Feeling what?
I don't know. Perhaps it's this horrible old house. Everything about it is just plain evil. Oh, Alec, why don't you give it all up?
Give what up?
This obsession of yours. You started writing a book, doing psychical research to prove that there were no such things as apparitions or ghosts.
Suppose I found out that I was wrong.
What?
Yes, what would you say if I told you that I'd already seen one apparition here and that I was expecting to see another one?
Alec, oh no.
Oh, yes, Jean. The first evening I came here, I saw Calhoun. I talked to him. He showed me around the house. And later on, I discovered that he had died the day before. I waited for him to come back again, but he never did.
I finally realized why. He couldn't come back because he hadn't died here. He had died at the sanitarium. But now, I'm waiting for Sanders to come back.
Sanders? But he didn't die here either. He died?
Yes, Jean.
I don't like it here, Alec. I'm afraid. I'm going.
No, Jean. Don't go. You can help me.
Huh?
Come on in here. Into the parlor.
But Alec...
Come on, Jean. Later I'll tell you a very interesting story about this room, about something that happened here a long time ago.
But I... All right, Alec.
That's a good girl. You know, Jean, I've just realized I've been very stupid. Calhoun couldn't come back again because he didn't die here. Sanders did die here, but he wasn't buried here. And now I'm beginning to think that a spirit can only materialize in the place where its body is.
But what's that got to do with me?
Dear, does anyone know that you came here tonight?
Why, no, but...
Good.
What do you mean? And what are you doing with that cane?
You remember I said I was going to tell you a story about something that had happened here in this room? Well, this cane played an important part in it. You see, it's not just an ordinary cane. This is a sword cane. It's what Calhoun used when he killed his wife, right where you're standing.
Alec, you killed Sanders.
Exactly.
And now you're going to kill me.
Yes, dear. I am going to kill you. And I'm going to bury you right here, down in the cellar where Calhoun buried his wife. Then at least you will be able to come back. Try and run away. It won't do any good. You see, I locked the door.
No. Keep away from me.
I'm sorry.
Keep away.
My
help!
Dear!
Help!
Now, let's smooth up the gravel a little. She's coming well. There. That ought to do it.
Very nice, Doctor. Very nice indeed. You didn't do quite as neat a job as I did, but you did...
You, Calhoun.
Yes, Doctor.
You're dead. But you did come back.
Yes, I came back to tell you how grateful I am to you.
Grateful? For what?
For having, shall we say, relieved me. You see, there's a curse on this house. When I was alive and lived here, even before I killed my wife and Burroughs, I saw the ghosts of those who had died before I was born. It was they who made me kill, because once I did kill, they were free.
I don't understand.
Don't you? As long as this house stands, someone must haunt it. Until I died, it was haunted by those whom I had killed. When I died, it became my job. I thought it would be years before I could find someone to take my place, and then... You came along.
You mean...
Yes, Doctor, yes, the curse, the evil that was spawned here has been passed on to you. Now it's haunted by those whom you killed, and I am free and can rest in peace. But you must stay here and live with the evil you created until you die.
No. No. No, I won't stay.
Yes, you will, Doctor. Oh, I didn't believe it either. I thought I could leave whenever I wanted to. But I found that I couldn't. I had to stay until they took me away. When you try to leave, you'll find out why.
But I won't stay. I tell you, I won't. Neither you nor they can make me stay. Nothing can make me stay.
No.
No! What's more, you're right about this place. It is evil. But I'm not going to let that evil continue. It must be destroyed. Along with every stick and stone in this house.
And just how do you propose to do that?
I'll show you. With fire. This can of kerosene.
Oh,
that
no.
Pile of lumber there.
It won't do any good. Take my word for it.
No, you watch. There. The whole cellar, the whole house will go now.
Yes, Doctor, but you won't go.
I won't. You watch me.
But you can't go without me, Doc.
What?
Don't you remember? You carried me out to the car. You've got to take me with you.
Sanders.
Yes, Doctor, your chauffeur.
Let go of me, Sanders. Let go. I can't take you with me.
And you've got to take me too, Alec.
No, Jane, no. Let me go.
both of you.
You see, now you know why I couldn't go either.
But no.
What dragged me back and weighed me down.
Please.
Now you know why you're going to have to stay here.
I won't stay. I tell you, I won't. Not even if I have to take both Sanders and Jean with me.
I'm afraid that won't do any good, Doctor. You see, the ladder isn't very strong.
No! It broke. I'm trapped here.
Goodbye, Doctor. If you don't mind, I leave you now for good.
Help! Help! Somebody!
The flames roar higher and higher as Dr. Goff screams and staggers backward. Far away, a bell starts tolling for
Murder at Midnight.
Remember to be with us again when death stretches out his bony hand and the clocks strike 12 for
Murder at Midnight.
The part of Dr. Goff was played by Barry Kroger. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To listen to our original storytelling podcasts and for all things suspense, horror, and weird, check out CrypticCountyPodcasts.com, where you'll find shows like Let's Not Meet, a true horror podcast, and Odd Trails, a true paranormal podcast. We'll see you next time. Stay safe.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story... That's what ought to happen next.
It did.